All right, it is the Eddie and Rocky Show. Eddie is out today. I'm alongside Rachel once again. Rachel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. There's a lot of excitement around town here, right? The Reds are winning.
Yes.
1-3 in a row. The Bengals got a big game tomorrow. A lot of folks, including me, think they have a good chance in that game. But who's not having a good time at the moment are the Ohio bar and restaurant owners. Okay, and especially after yesterday when Governor Beshear in Kentucky said, oh, we're going to allow our bars to be open now till 11 o'clock. So they get an extra hour on the Ohio bars, which is fine if your state doesn't exactly butt right up next to the state that's allowing you to have an extra hour. So this is a problem for a lot of bar owners here in town.
Yeah, and I think you can probably speak to this even more than I can. Kentucky, you know, playing football. Are you going to tell some SEC fans that they got to leave the bar before the game's over?
Not happening.
Right. So yeah. That was probably just a smart move on Beshear's end.
There you go. Well, join us right now is our good friend from the Holy Grail, Jim Mooring. Jim, how are you, buddy?
You know what? We're doing pretty dang well. The Red Legs are on a little bit of a roll. If we can keep that going, our Bengals look pretty good on Sunday. Keep that going, yeah. And you know, get some Ohio State playing football, and we'll see how everything kind of goes.
See, but that,
Rachel,
yeah,
Rachel hit that one on the head, man. Can you imagine being down in Lexington when UK is playing Alabama? And, you know, 10 o'clock comes or 11 o'clock comes, you're going to throw them out for an 8 o'clock game.
That's torches.
Anarchy.
And pitchforks.
Yes.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah. So guess who gets to deal with that tomorrow night?
Right. Well, and again, it's even more hurtful because, yeah, the big Thursday night Bengals game, a lot of folks in this town excited about. They want to get out, enjoy some pops, and watch Joe Burrow. But they still, I mean, God, this is going on, what, 2 months here? The Ohio bars are shut down at 10 p.m. But now, so tell us the impact here, Jim, because I've talked to some other bar owners that said this is pretty consequential. The fact that, okay, people say, oh, it's just an hour, but in your business, you see this every day. How is this going to affect you when folks in Cincinnati can now go right across the river to that bar knowing it'll stay open till 11 instead of 10?
You know, it puts you at a competitive disadvantage. And first and foremost, I have a bunch of friends who own places over in northern Kentucky. Great for you guys. Fantastic. I think as a bar restaurant community, I want everybody to flourish and quite bluntly, be able to get through this pandemic and get to the other side and still have a business. So this isn't a, hey, I hate Northern Kentucky bars because I don't. I frequent them. The restaurants over there are some of the most fantastic operators in the world. But with that being said, it just puts us at a disadvantage so quickly. And it's just so, it's mind-numbingly stupid. There is just no rhyme or reason to why we are doing this. The numbers don't bear out. They've never borne it out. And, you know, now that you have, you know, Kentucky moving in that direction, what I'm hearing from my friends on the west side already, from, you know, the guys that own Scoreboard, known Cabana, and have Crimers and those great places out there, they're telling me, hey, Jim, you know what's happening out here? They're just going over to Indiana. The Indiana bar.
Yeah.
Double disadvantage, yeah.
Yeah, and kudos to them. This isn't like, again, I don't want this to come off like, I don't want those guys to be open. I'm just saying what is happening. Those folks, you know, 10 o'clock comes, they call last call, everybody heads out to the casino, everybody heads out the Borderline, everybody heads out to Willie's, and, you know, it's a shift. And it's not that people are, you know, it's one thing if everybody was going home. They're not. They're going to parties. They're going to Airbnbs. They are going to parks. They're going out. We're just not seeing the benefit from it now.
Yeah.
As a business. And bluntly, you know, look, we're like as the Holy Grail, we're fine. It is crushing our staff. It is just crushing the bartenders and servers who can't make those extra tips and those 2 hours that are just the most fruitful. They just are. They're our highest profit margin hours, and it's also their money making time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just crazy. Hopefully, who would have thought that the Kentucky governor would be more business friendly than the Ohio governor? Because that's what it's coming down to right now. It's just common sense.
Jim, I wonder, how is the communication with you and the people that are basically in charge of regulating bars right now and when they close? Has there been any communication in terms of when we might see an end to this? Any explanation behind their reasoning for keeping the hours what they currently are?
No, none. It's been radio silent. I figured out a couple weeks ago that the best way to try to get through to most of these politicians is through social media. And I put out, and I'm still curious to see what happens, you know, what, you know, tomorrow night for the Browns game, take the Holy Grail out of the equation, put other places into it, but also understand that the stadium they're playing in has a liquor license. So they have to stop at 10 o'clock serving, and at 11 o'clock they have to throw everybody out of the stadium. Are they going to do that?
That's interesting. That'd be a nice little science experiment to see.
Right. So that's what I put out there. Like, okay, I want a video of the security guys trying to throw out the Cleveland fans with, you know, 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Right. And if they're not going to do that, then how, you know, it's just selective enforcement. So, you know, the Browns have got a great lobbying arm who got to DeWine and to Husted and said, here's what's happening. Okay, yeah, and I agree with it. I think there should be more fans in the stands. I have to say that. But on the other hand, so they have a liquor license. What are they doing tomorrow night? And nobody wants to address it. It's hysterical. I sent some emails, talked to some people. Nobody's even asking DeWine about it. It's just kind of sitting there. And, you know, we're going to be very hard-pressed tomorrow night. Am I really going to throw people out at 11 o'clock tomorrow night? You know, it's a tough one.
Right. Jim Mooring from the Holy Grail joining us. You wonder what numbers are looking at, because I have some numbers that I've looked at. I look at them every day.
And
of course, it doesn't matter as much if you own a bar or restaurant in Columbus, because, you know, you're not right next to a place where they can literally drive, you know, a quarter mile and be at a place that, like Kentucky, where you can be open. But, I mean, right now I'm seeing in Hamilton County, there have been a total of 32 deaths under the age of 60, okay, in a county of 820,000 people, okay? 32 deaths under the age of 60, and right now I'm seeing 9 cases per 100,000, so that's 0.01% infection here in Hamilton County. We're still in the yellow or whatever it is. So you wonder, like, where is the pandemic? Where is the need to keep everyone home?
A step further, if you look at since they've imposed this curfew, the numbers haven't moved.
Correct.
They haven't moved an ounce. It hasn't. It's staggering how the average of, you know, cases per day, hospitalizations per day, deaths per day, ICU per day that I've been tracking, and I've been doing it diligently. It hasn't moved. It hasn't gone. It hasn't gotten better. It hasn't gotten worse. For the last 3 months, since the mask mandate went in, it is pretty much flat everywhere. And I'll go back to it. Hamilton County has said time and time again, you know, everybody wants to, politicians use this as a wedge, right? It's, all right, we'll open up schools if you close the bars. You got to close the restaurants in order to have school. And it goes back and forth, and it's become so political that it's just, it's crazy.
But why don't they look at the data like you and I do and a lot of people do and say, okay, let's look at it from 2 months ago. Has it been a sharp trend down? There's been a sharp trend up? If not, then why are we doing this? The politicians, they look at their poll numbers, but they don't look at the damn data. The data is right there to look at, and why not follow it? Last question, Jim. I mean, look, we're going to turn around here soon in about, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks, and it should be cold. So all the bars and restaurants like yours that have outdoor service, the little business you're doing in that capacity right now is going to be gone. It's going to be cold. No one's going to sit outside in the freezing cold and drink a beer or eat some nachos. So what kind of impact is that going to have on you if you guys don't get something changed to allow more people to come inside the bar or restaurant?
You know, I've been saying this for a while, Rock, and you hit it right on the head. I think there is going to be so much pain in our industry in November, December, January, and February. January and February are always the slowest time for every restaurant. And, you know, you save up and you know it's coming and try to get ahead. Nobody can do that right now.
Yeah.
Nobody's doing it. And, you know, there are people, you know, the fast food places and, you know, the fast casuals, they're doing fine. It's the restaurants. It's the mom and pops. It is the folks. Like I said, you know, my guys out at Scoreboard, my friend Natalie at Knockback Nats. There are places that are just shriveling up because their margins right now are getting crushed, and we're all staring at the exact same thing you just said.
Yeah.
November through March is going to be monumentally bad.
It's going to be brutal. And look, I mean, the national chains, they can probably withstand all this, but the mom and pop places like yours and, like you said, Knockback Nats, that, which is what people want to go to. People want to frequent, the unique little places that are in their city or in their neighborhood. And
yeah, because I've got to tell you, the city's been nothing but great to us. Folks have been coming down, and I can't thank Cincinnatians enough. They've embraced us, and they've taken care of it. This isn't just a whining session. This is a, hey, there is going to be a huge problem coming down the pike, and the more we try to get done now to address it, the better off we're all going to be. And it just seems to, there's no political will right now to change this, and I don't know why. Yeah. It just sits there.
Well, keep hammering them, Jim. We will be here too. So, but best of luck, man, and best of luck to all your folks down at that restaurant there. Thank you.
Nah, appreciate it. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
All right, Jim Mooring from the Holy Grail.
Favorite Holy Grail dish? We should have asked Jim or said this while Jim was on. Mine's Reagan salad. How about you?
Oh God.
They have some. I think it's some.
I always get the burger. I'm like kind of.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
They have good cheese fries there too. They have some good cheese fries.
Cheese fries are good anywhere.
But they bring the homemade ranch with it.
Mm. That's key.
Mm-hmm. That's some good eating right there.
There you go, sir. Rob, what do you got?
Mm-hmm. From the UC Health Traffic Center, UC Health is proud to provide emergency care services. Our ERs are standing by to provide the safe care you need. Learn more at uchealth.com. There's an accident eastbound Columbia Parkway now approaching Beachmont Avenue, and an injury accident crews are working on in Erlanger-Dixie Highway at Hallam Avenue. Expect some slowdowns. Northbound 75 between Glendale-Milford and 275. North 71 between Ridge and Stewart. A good-sized backup forming North 71 getting by the Sparta Kentucky Speedway exit. 12-minute construction delay South 75 from 7th Street, and your stop-and-go northbound 75 from 275 on up past Dixie Highway. I'm Rob Williams, News Radio 700 WLW.
Rocky alongside Rachel today. Coming up at 4 o'clock, Bobby Carpenter from The Fan up in Columbus will join us. He's a former Ohio State Buckeye. He does a radio show up there. Going to talk about the Big Ten, Rachel. The Big Ten is back.
How excited are you right now?
I'm excited for a lot of reasons. So they're 8-game schedule. Now, there's going to be some details I want to talk about. It's, there's no bye week. So a lot of these conferences put in bye weeks, like the ACC, for instance, put three different kind of off weeks within their schedule just in case a team or a bunch of teams come down with COVID. They can move some games around. That won't happen in the Big Ten. So it's kind of a feast or famine situation.
You're
going to
get it done or you aren't. So.
Well, and it's so interesting just how everyone talks about how different this season is. And I don't want to puke when I hear that because I've heard it so much. But it's true. I mean, the game I was on this past Saturday was UTSA at Texas State. Texas State has this great quarterback named Brady McBride. He's kind of Brett Favre-ish, kind of gunslinger, like, twirl around, throw the ball off his back foot, and really dynamic, fun player, and their best player. Practices all week, and then boom, Friday. They test on Monday, Thursday, Friday. Friday, boom. Takes a test, and we don't know exactly if he was positive or if it was just contact tracing, but he is out due to COVID protocol. So, 24 hours before the game, they find out their best player and like three other guys can't play. And that's going to happen a lot this year.
Okay. If you are the player in question, right? Like, how does your coach, I guess, interact with you? I mean, you're expected to quarantine. You're expected to basically keep the team on the field, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how is that interaction between coaches and kids that are potentially, or how would you, I guess, guess?
I mean, they got to, like, they can't be with the team. They got to quarantine. I don't know outside of that. I don't know if they just expect them to go sit in their apartments for 14 days or whatever it is. But now what a lot of coaches are doing, and the coach Jake Spavadal for Texas State was smart. He had, never at one time did he have all of his quarterbacks in the same meeting room.
Yeah.
Just in case something like this, because boom, then they all get it. All your quarterbacks go down. So that was smart. So they were able to get by, and they, side note, they should have won that game. But nevertheless, we're going to see a lot of this, and it's going to be weird to see a whole position group go down, and then especially, contact tracing. That's the frustrating part. You can be ruled out of a game without actually testing positive. You can just be within, 6 feet of someone for a total of 15 minutes over 48 hours, and you can't play. That's crazy.
I actually today stumbled across COVID alerts on my iPhone. I have an iPhone, and I just realized that I can turn on contact tracing for myself, basically, if other people turn on their... So basically, if you opt in, your iPhone can track whether or not you've been near a person with COVID.
That's creepy. I don't want that information out there.
I was like, why is this on my phone? What kind of update was this that I did not agree to again? Great.
That's how it works. Just real quick and easy. Click yes, and there you go.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I got a little, just a brief update on the little Miami situation involving who some scholarships are going to go to. Don't miss that. We'll be back in four. News Radio 700 WLW. All right, it's 3:40. Rocky alongside Rachel. So, Rachel, you've emceed the event, the Holiday for Heroes event, mm-hmm. in Northern Kentucky. I did it a couple years ago. Mo just did it this past weekend. I believe, from what I was told, it was a great success. And what that foundation does, it raises money for children of first responders, gives them scholarships, things like that. So this year, Holiday for Heroes has decided to give their scholarship money to Brady James and Jared Bentley. Who are they? They're the two kids that were involved with the Little Miami situation where they brought the flags, the thin blue line, thin red line flags out to the field. They were then suspended, and then that suspension was rescinded. We dealt with that yesterday. But joining us right now on the show is Mitch Kotzbauer with that organization to talk about the giving the scholarships away and the implications. Mitch, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. So just tell me what went into the decision here and kind of what the news is.
Gosh, man, there was no decision to make at all. Obviously, we had our event this weekend, so we were super busy, kind of lost touch with everything that was going on. And then Sunday and Monday, started getting back in the swing of things and reading news and saw the story and was just absolutely heartbroken by it. And it was just an instinct that these are the two kids that deserve our money more than anybody else out there right now.
So what happens? So they get the money and they can use this for college, or if they're going into a police academy training, fire training, that sort of thing?
Yeah, trade school, any post-education, past high school, absolutely.
Gotcha. Now, have you received any reaction, pushback, applause? What's the situation when it pertains to that?
My phone has been blowing up today. It has all been positive, without a doubt. Our social media stuff is lighting up. We've got people contacting us wanting to be involved, asking how to be involved. It's been great, and I hope the outpouring has gone on to these two boys as well.
Yeah, and I know you and I talked earlier today that situation seems to be there's embers still burning with that, and some things. I know some discussions back and forth on who's saying what, and maybe records requests and that sort of thing about who told the boys they couldn't play, who said they were suspended, that sort of thing. And maybe you and I won't get into all that, but that sort of thing is still brewing, is it not?
Yeah, it certainly seems to be, which is taking away from what these boys wanted to get out there to the public. And that was just that they support their parents and they support first responders and they're honoring 9/11. That's what this was all about. That's all it was intended to be. These kids love their community, their school, their coaching staff. They didn't want any of this extra publicity. They just did what they thought was right in the moment, and we support them 100%.
Well, very good, Mitch. We appreciate your time here, and I agree with the decision, and best of luck to you guys moving forward here.
You got it. Thanks, Rock. See you, Rachel.
Yep, thanks, Mitch. See ya. So you and I got into this yesterday a little bit. I thought we had a good discussion, did we not? Back and forth a little bit?
Turning my mic back on. Yeah, it was okay.
It was okay?
Yeah, it was okay. All right. You were really into it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a...
That's usually how it goes, though, between, you know, men and women. It's like, ah, man, wasn't that awesome? And I'm like, yeah, it was all right, I guess.
But, I mean, your side was, you know, look, the kids broke the rules. And
I know.
You broke the
I
rules
mean,
in
hey,
life,
kids, if you're looking for a scholarship, here's the key. Go break the rules that have been set out by the people, the adults in your life, what they've told you not to do. Go out there, do that. Maybe you'll get some free money.
But look, as I said, and I still stand by what I said, people are sick of the double standard when it comes to who can break the rules, who cannot, what's acceptable, what's not, right? Goodyear, the company, puts out a seminar to their people saying, you can't have any political statements, you can't wear hats, shirts, anything political, but you can wear BLM stuff all you want, you can wear gay pride stuff all you want, and that sort of thing is fine. So people are saying, wait a minute now, is it... So we'd like to think, I would love if we lived in a world where it was all or nothing, but oftentimes it's not. Why are, you know, people told they can't go to church and they're arrested if they're outside because they're within 6 feet of people, but people are allowed to protest at will. So folks look at that and they say, well, who's the stupid one here? Us for following the rules? when nothing happens to the other side, when they decide to break them, so what the hell? I agree, it's a tough situation, and it's not something you want, but there's one side for there's no question about it, that's saying, you know, I'm sick of this, right?
Well, yeah, but I think this is like 10% on the left and 10% on the right, and then everybody in the middle. You know, they're dealing with stuff like food insecurity. They're dealing with stuff like lost jobs because of COVID-19. They're dealing with things like, how do we educate our children?
Who? You say who's who?
I'm going to say middle America. The people mm-hmm. that are not that 10% on the right and the 10% on the left, not the people that are draping themselves in the American flag or the people that are
burning buildings down.
There's a lot of people in the middle that have issues in their life. You know, I just think that we should focus on, you know, talking about some of those issues rather than things that really only apply to one extreme or the other. And I think that those people in the middle.
I still see how supporting police and fire is, that's not an extreme position.
Yeah,
that's a pretty broad opinion. If you can't feed
your kids, you really don't care about these kids at Little Miami and what they did on the field, whether it was right or wrong. You just don't care because you got other problems, real problems that aren't going to get fixed, whether they're disciplined or not. And and food insecurity due to COVID-19 is around 25% right now.
What is food insecurity? What
means you can't feed your children, Rocky. That's the nice way of saying people are going hungry.
So you think that is the main issue going on in the country?
No, I think that when you talk about issues like this,
I would say it's all the bar owners and restaurant people and all the people that have been put out of work because of COVID. Now that's a major issue that we deal with all the time.
And those are probably some of the people that are dealing with not being able to feed their children, not being able to get their kids to school because they have issues.
I mean, supporting the police, that is like in the hierarchy of what's important in this election, that's probably number two. Number one or number two, right? I mean, that's going to be the swing issue. Do we defund the police or do we support the police and fire?
That is a very big issue. I don't know that even breaks my top five.
All right. Rob, what do you got?
From the UC Health Traffic Center, UC Health is proud to provide emergency.
Steady and Rocky show coming up at after 4 o'clock. Bobby Carpenter will check in with us, talk about the implications. All the details of the Big Ten is now set to play. I believe they're going to start their season Friday, October 23rd. 8-game schedule in 8 weeks. Then a title game December 19th. So we'll get that at 4, but Rachel, you had something. What was it?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
What are you talking about? Wait, the thing we were going to do like a half an hour ago?
What do you want to do?
I was talking about Cardi B. That's why I'm really confused. I was like, was that what we were talking about?
No, I'm not talking about Cardi B.
Are you talking about the billionaire thing?
I got something. So how about this? So there's a guy named Chuck Feeney.
Okay, a billionaire thing. Okay.
89 years old. This is a good story. And I think everyone dreams of, you know, you make a bunch of money, you like to give some away to foundations and whatnot, and that's a very blessed thing to do. But this guy, he was a co-founder of the duty-free shops, right, in the airports. You've seen those?
Yep.
Massed, of course, billions and billions of dollars. But his philosophy was always, I want to die broke, right? I want to leave this earth broke. And it's kind of a cool way of thinking about it because he goes, you know, a lot of folks will accrue a bunch of money, and then they say, upon my death, then all my money will go to this charity or this foundation. But you never really get to see where it goes, right? You never get to see, you know, your money in action. So he kind of had the other philosophy of he was going to amass some money, but then over the course of his life, start to give it away. So over the course of his life, had accrued a fortune over $10 billion, okay? And he's donated over $8 billion of it to charities. In 2012... he set aside $2 million for him and his wife's retirement, okay? And then he proceeded to give the rest of the $10 billion away. Not bad, right? Which is essentially $375,000 more money than in his current net worth. And he also, interestingly, gave it away anonymously, right? So he wouldn't, you know, a lot of folks will, hey, I want to donate a building to a college or I want to do this in my name. His fingerprints, or never had anything named after him, all that sort of thing. Truly I just thought it was kind of a cool story. He gave us some bigger, you know, some big time sort of situations, modernized Vietnam's healthcare system, spent $350 million New York's Roosevelt Island to get some technology going there, some philanthropic work in Northern Ireland, So anyway,
so he spread it out like all over the
Cool. I mean, yeah, and you know, he gave to a bunch of different stuff. I just thought it was interesting. A lot of folks will give just because they want the notoriety of, hey, look at that nice building I gave, or look at that building my parents gave to the university. But I don't know, man. But the philosophy too of just saying, rather than just kind of letting it go and let my trust take care of it, I want to see what I want to get to see it with my own eyes. That was pretty cool.
What charities would you, if you were going to give away all your money, what would the charities be?
I'd give to Life Learning Center, which I already do. There a lot would go there. I'd give to Dragonfly. I'd give to, and I do there as well. I'd probably give some to. I don't know. I have to think about it. What about you?
Right. I do ASPCA. I like giving to animal.
That'd be cool.
And there's especially in Kentucky, there's a lot of horse rescue organizations. A little bit goes a long way with them. So throw some there. Mm-hmm. And probably Native American Children and Learning. A lot of different tribes have funds set up to kind of help modernize their mm-hmm. classrooms, because it's hard to get funding for that, given how, right. you know, the bureau's set up. So I'd probably do that. Those would probably be cool. My three.
I'll tell you one I would like to do is dedicate and like buy a piece of land and put a like a indoor kind of whatever sports complex, right? So in over in Cheviot, there's Hobner Field, right? Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of baseball fields. And the family, like I think back in the 60s, bought this, you know, and they set it up and like, look, so a certain amount of money every year will go to maintenance and the crew and da 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 and repairs
awesome.
And all that. And
yeah.
So that'd be a pretty cool thing to do, to have something kind of live on.
And it kind of fits with your background too. So it would be something that would make a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, I just never got the whole allure of having a building on campus, because you know what? There's a bunch of kids that hate going to your building every day. Like, why, you know, like, you know, right. do something that is fun.
All right, Bobby Carpenter up next on the Big Ten, News Radio 700 WLW. All right, it is Eddie and Rocky's show. Eddie is out alongside Rachel today, and Rachel, the Big Ten is back. Big
Hallelujah.
News. Big news. Obviously, because it's not just impactful to the football team and the athletic department, but the entire universities. The surrounding community, everything. Big Ten football is usually worth between $60 and $100 million.
Yeah, the more money they can bring in, the fewer layoffs they have to have.
Correct.
The fewer furloughs, more scholarships, whole deal. So that it's not just the field that's impacted. It's everything at the university level.
Exactly. The Big Ten Council of Presidents and Chancellors, the COP, if you will, the turning point was they adopted significant medical protocols, including daily antigen testing, enhanced cardiac screening, an enhanced data-driven approach when making decisions about practice and competition. The vote apparently was unanimous to resume football starting the weekend of October 23rd and 24th. And with some more details on this, I want to bring on Bobby Carpenter of The Fan up in Columbus and former Ohio State football player. Bobby, how are you, buddy?
Rocky Rach, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm excited. It's finally nice to have something to be happy about. So when someone asks you how you're doing, you can say, I'm doing well and I actually mean it.
There you go. So, Bobby, behind the scenes, take us through. I know you're around the Big Ten a lot. What happened? What was finally led to this decision being made here today?
Well, I think part of it was, you know, initially there was new information that came out. We'll go back even further. I think the fact that once the testing, the immediate testing or 5-minute testing from Abbott became available, and you know the White House said that they would provide it and provide whatever they needed, and there's a lot of pushback on that, whether the Big Ten's actually going to take it or not. I don't believe that they are. At least they're trying not to at this point. And you know the reason was they don't want to take it away from students and people. Well, you're talking about maybe 250,000 tests. If you test 150 people every day for 16 weeks on 14 teams, there's 150 million tests, for heaven's sake. So I'm not sure what all is going on with that. But I think that came out, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, you told me, you said that we didn't have ample testing. Well, now there's that availability. And so that's when you saw Justin Fields come out, and a lot of players started standing up, talking, saying, we want to play. Parents, you know, parents like organizing, mm-hmm. having rallies, and just all of the political pressure, and not political, social pressure, the parents, coaches, you know, some of the ADs, the players, all that stuff, I think finally reached a critical mass to where they couldn't deny when you're seeing high schools, middle schools, other colleges in your state, whether it's Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Pitt, playing in the same footprint and the NFL, and NFL testing going really well, like, hey, maybe we should reexamine this because there's a lot of other things we're trying to handle, and this might be one fight that we don't really need to have.
Bobby, Big Ten is saying that it was the testing, that the reason that they called off the season initially was because they didn't think they would have what they needed in order to get all these kids tested. And now they're turning around a couple weeks later. It turns out we can do rapid testing. Do you think that this was because of the social outcry, or do you think it was because they were really just ill-informed about what their options were, or the option wasn't there yet?
Well, I think the option wasn't there yet once the option became available. Because remember, Kevin Warren came out and said this would not be revisited in his, like, follow-up letter. So, I mean, that right there, like, it tells you, like, hey, they were pretty firm. I don't know if they didn't think the testing would be there or if they didn't think the backlash would be that strong. And here's the one thing you have to remember. You know, Rocky, you know, Rach, you guys are media personalities. Rocky, you played in the NFL. You played at Notre Dame. Like, you're used to having to go up to a podium after a game and answer questions about failures that you made. Coaches are used to doing that. You're used to seeing people tell you that however great your show is, that maybe they didn't like it that day, mm-hmm. and they thought it was trash in more colorful terms. Well, I don't think these presidents who are used to ribbon-cutting ceremonies and announcements about grants and all these scientific breakthroughs, like, no one's ever been critical of them before and called them on some of the decisions they've made. So I think that had a lot to do with it. It kind of stung a little bit, where most people in the media and athletes, like, you get kind of calloused to it because right. this happens so often. And I don't think they were fully aware of that. The testing came on board, and so they revisited it, and there was really no reason not to. I just don't understand at the beginning why they didn't choose to just delay and say, you know right. what, we're going to have our start date be, you know, October 1st or October 14th, so pick a date, and then move forward from there as opposed to just saying we're canceling it, it's done and over.
I think you make a good point, Bobby, about the presidents and the chancellors receiving backlash to the degree they had and no idea that they would be getting, and I firmly believe that was the big deciding factor here. They thought people would understand, but people don't understand. And then I think they started looking at, well, wait a minute, this doesn't just impact the football team. This impacts the entire university, all the professors, the staff, I mean, the endowment. I mean, you name it on down, the people that work in the town, like towns like Columbus, all of that. So I'm with you. I don't know why. You don't just, you kind of plow through in life until you absolutely can't. And then you kind of direct course and you kind of, okay, maybe we'll pause for a little bit or this and that. But to make that decision, I believe it was on like August 3rd or 4th or something like that, when there was still a lot of time to go, didn't make any sense. But I guess I'm glad that they actually finally came to their senses.
Well, absolutely, Rock. And, you know, when you look at this, I think Kevin Warren was very premature. And obviously canceling the non-conference, from what I've been told, they're having kind of weekly conference commissioner meetings. He did that without any warning, advanced warning to the other commissioners, and I don't think they like that. And then the canceling of the season he did without kind of, you know, warning and saying anything else, and then thought that they would all hop on board because it's right. the Big Ten and their science is supposed to be the best. Well, then you have Notre Dame save the ACC and say, you know, they're a distinguished academic institution who has good football. Hey, we're going to try. Gordon Gee at West Virginia, they said, was a huge voice from the Big 12 saying that we're going to do it. And he was out publicly saying that. So those things kind of factored in. And also you talked about the economic impact and the university athletic departments, the schools and everything. But let's not also forget this. And this is where it should be political. Now, not partisan, but I do believe politicians should be involved because these schools, a lot of times, are the largest economic driver in their region. And some of the highest paid employees, like the president, are there. And so they should have a say in what goes on. Mm-hmm. And if you think about taking away football games on Saturday, even with no fans, like I have friends that own bars and they, you know, that were talking mm-hmm. about, you know, when there was, you know, Blue Jackets games on the playoffs, like we were at least back to like a normal threshold for a normal Saturday. Now, not a game day, but a normal threshold. That's helping the servers. Also, that's driving more tax dffollars into the coffers of the government, which, you know, let's face it, like everything is retracted so much. Like this was a big issue with how big it was. And I think, you know, the presidents and Kevin Warren kind of acting unilaterally, it aggravated some of the state legislatures and probably some of the governors as well.
Bobby, do you think that now it's just about trying to save face too a little bit, where, you know, you had these other conferences that did their research, were willing to say, you know what, we're going to wait. We're not going to bow to public opinion or any opinion quite yet. We're going to see how this goes. And now the Big Ten is like, oh, you know what? Yeah, we could probably play some football now. Like, we probably could do that, you know?
I think that was a little bit. I mean, it was becoming glaringly obvious when there's high schools playing. Ohio's going to be in week four, and to my knowledge, I haven't heard of any catastrophic events yet to where there's been serious issues. So that's there. Watching the other colleges play, obviously, that hurts significantly. And then I think a lot of the doctors were beginning to speak out. And I'm fortunate I get to live within about a mile and a half radius of three different cardiologists who all of them are coaching sports, their kids are playing sports, and they're like, listen, there's risks in everything, but this doesn't, right. We don't view this as an elevated risk of anything more. And then they start studying stuff, and like, well, you know, 5 out of the 24 athletes had this on a cardiac MRI. And talking to one of the guys who I coach my son's flag football team with, he goes, we haven't studied this for any other virus the way we're doing here. Right. So we have no idea how that impacts after a flu virus or any other novel virus that we haven't really looked into. And so it's like anytime you look for problems, you're going to start to find them. But how significant were those issues, and are they really life-threatening or life-altering? And I think a lot of the consensus is among the cardiac community that they're not.
Fear has driven this whole thing, and it's clouded people's ability to look at the data and look at what actually is going on and how it affects not only their life, but the lives of a lot of people and the economic impact and all of that. I always just thought it was an odd scenario that, you know, UC is going to be playing. My high school, St. Xavier, is playing. Your high school, Lancaster, is playing. But Ohio State, it was not be playing football in the fall. That was weird. Now, let me ask you about some of the questionable things, but things that could not maybe work out well for the Big Ten. I see no bye week, Bobby. So it's 8 games in 8 weeks. A lot of these other conferences built in some bye weeks in case there's a bunch of positive tests, or, you know, they got to, you know, kind of distance for a couple weeks. And I'm also seeing, I guess, a 21-day suspension for a positive test. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the 21-day is the 14-day quarantine plus, you know, a 7-day acclimation period, which I think is a bit excessive. Like, if these kids
are a third of the season. That's a third of the season right there. Boom.
Exactly. And so that's a little ridiculous. You know, if you're out for 2 weeks and you're quarantined, then you can come back and play. That decision should be on the player and the coach, not necessarily on, you know, just a random blanket ruling. And then, yeah, Rock, I don't know why they didn't try. Well, I know why, because they waited in dilly-dally too long. So instead of starting the 17th, you start the 24th, and you literally give yourself no margin for error. So now you're trying to thread a needle from, like, 3 feet away. And so if they just would have done this in a more expedited manner, then I don't think it would have been an issue. And you could have had a bye week after 4 weeks and found a way to make sure you made up any games, or, you know, had a week off, you know, week 7 or whatever it was, to try to be able to make games up. And now they don't have that. And so they're running on a very thin margin. Hopefully it goes as well as Ohio high school football is going right now. And that's, I think, what everybody's kind of praying for.
All right, last question, Bobby. So the Big Ten is going to play 8 games, and you know you're going to be having this discussion and arguments about it. Does a 8-win Big Ten team make it in over an ACC team that's going to play, like, say, like Notre Dame, that's going to play 11 games? Say they go 9-2 or 10-1. If Ohio State wins just 8 games, do they get in the playoff over, again, say, a 2-loss team that plays 11 games?
You know, and this, I think, goes back to best to most deserving, the argument there. And, you know, I think this is going to be a highly subjective year, mostly on the eye test. And let's be honest, I mean, most of the non-conference games, those are really checked as wins, usually, especially if you're paying for them. Mm-hmm. Everyone hates paying for a loss. And so, like, outside of the Ohio State-Oregon game, like, you weren't learning anything from Ohio State on the other couple non-conference games. You're not learning anything really from a Rutgers or some of these games. So as long as you have 3 big data points in my mind, I think you can make a big enough judgment, because that's usually what college football teams have. 3 or 4 big data points that you analyze those games where the competition is equal or maybe a little better or right around, you know, a margin of error of where that team is. And that's how you judge them. So I think if you have a Big Ten team, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, where there's a perception that they're really good already, they go undefeated. I think that that would be enough to get them in.
I'm just saying, Bobby, if Notre Dame beats Clemson, but they go ultimately 9-1, and Ohio State gets in over Notre Dame, there will be anarchy, and I will be leading it. Bobby, we appreciate the time. All right, buddy. Thank you.
I would expect nothing less, Ross, man. I would expect nothing less, sir. Thank you.
All right, Bob, we'll talk soon, buddy. Thank you very much. Bobby Carpenter with The Fan. So all is right in the world. Except the Pac-12, do they even exist anymore? No one's even...
Did they exist before?
Yeah, there's the million-dollar question. You nailed it.
Now, see, the Big Ten, that was a noteworthy conference.
Right.
Pac-12
has always been kind of...
Right. You know, it's an afterthought. It's the late-night games, you know.
Especially over here, or in this area.
I wonder how they're negating... like the potential risks of any infection. I just wonder the legalese like behind whatever paperwork these kids have to sign now. Because you have to sign away your life, right?
When you take the field. But people were against waivers, and I could never understand why. But they say, they don't hold up in court, this and that. So how they're getting around it, I don't know. But it's back. Rob, what do you think?
I am by no means a Pac-12 supporter or sympathizer, but you got to feel for some of those schools out there on the West Coast with all those wildfires going on.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff going on the West Coast right now, no question.
Well, yeah, I don't think they could play if they wanted to, if they were allowed.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching Inside Edition last night, and people are taking fans, like from the, you know, like Home Depot, and attaching air filters to them and putting them all over their house to like filter the air because there's so much soot and stuff in it. Wow. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. From the UC Health Traffic Center, UC Health.
All right, Rachel. So Hurricane Sally is creeping near the Florida-Alabama line. Not to be confused with Mustang Sally, which is that old Wilson Pickett song. I can't stand that song.
Or the band.
Like, yes. Right?
That's Florida Georgia.
Florida Georgia line.
See, that's how much I blocked that out, okay?
Correct. Anyway, Hurricane Sally is potentially going to cause some damage here. Checking in with ABC, Jim Ryan joins us. Jim, what do you got? What's the latest?
Yeah, and in fact, it is doing a lot of damage. Pensacola really is getting a hard hit. The storm came ashore early this morning as a Category 2 hurricane with winds of 105 miles per hour. It struck a little to the west of Pensacola in Gulf Shores Hill, Alabama. But, of course, on the east side, that's really the dirty side of the storm. And so Pensacola is really taking the brunt of it. They've got a lot of damage there. Flooding is still going on. Some high water rescues in both Alabama and in the Florida Panhandle as the storm creeps up to the north and the east at about 5 miles per hour, just a walking pace. That's part of what's making this really a tough one. All the rain that it's dumping in individual places.
But how long is it going to last? I mean, until it starts. I've read that it's moving at a particularly slow pace. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah. It is, yeah, and it's going to be another day or so before it moves away from the area completely, and the rain will keep falling, tapering off somewhat, sure, but a lot of the damage already has been done. The storm surge coupled with the heavy rain now has created a lot of flooding, not only saltwater flooding from the Gulf, but then the freshwater flooding that comes out of the sky, as it moves up to the north. And yeah, it's going to be a real challenge here for the next couple of days. Power has been knocked out to something like 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. They're still dealing with outages from Hurricane Laura at the southwest end of Louisiana last month.
Jim, the track of the hurricane now that it's made landfall is interesting because it looks like it's going to pop back over and basically potentially pick up more steam.
Well, if it goes back off into the Gulf, that's possible.
That's one of the tracks. Yeah, that's one of the tracks because they have a couple different models, and two or three have it going back out over the Atlantic.
Yeah, exactly. It'll probably wander off out the way. You know, Katrina, for example, in 2005, I caught Katrina in the southern tip of Florida there. It came through, and then it went out into the Gulf, and they said, maybe you better get over to New Orleans. It looks like it's going to go that way, and then it came crashing into New Orleans. So there were two landfalls with that storm. It's possible with Sally, but I think that generally it's going to just kind of peter out before it reaches the Atlantic.
All right, very good, Jim. We'll keep our eye on it. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
All right, see ya. Jim Ryan with ABC.
I'm seeing meteorologists, like, they have the different tracks, and there's, like, two or three that have it kind of just fizzling out, North Carolina, South Carolina, and then there's a couple tracks that have it going back out to the Atlantic, and meteorologists themselves are like, seriously, what, 2020, really?
I'll take your word for it, so whatever. But Hurricane Sally, real quick, back to my point. The song, Mustang Sally.
Yes.
That's a song that every classic rock cover band plays, and I hate it.
Really?
That is not a good song. I love Wilson Pickett's, was it Land of a Thousand Dances? Great song. Plenty of other staples, but that's like the staple song for classic rock bands.
I don't think you should play Skynyrd. If you're a classic, like a cover band, I don't think you should play Skynyrd because you're just never going to do it justice.
You're never going to do Freebird justice.
No, you're not. And I just think, I think out of respect, you shouldn't.
That's just an opinion. There you go. So we haven't talked about this, but you and I share a odd fascination with Tiger King.
Yes.
And now Carol Baskins has, she is now on the Dancing with the Stars show, and I guess her episode, I believe, was Monday night, had like the highest rating in the history of that horrible show.
And it came with a bonus, which was Don Lewis's family. Now, Don Lewis, if you are not a Tiger King fan, is the missing husband. He went missing back in 1997 of Carol Baskin. They did discover in Florida, the sheriff's department that is currently working on this case did discover that she had forged his will. They have proven that that is a forgery, that she used that will to get all of his money, which his kids resent, and obviously they should. But the that time ran out on being able to charge Carol for that particular crime, though Don is still missing and unaccounted for. So right. That is still an open investigation. So Don's children decided to steal a little bit of Carol's thunder on Monday and take out an ad on national TV during her Dancing with the Stars debut, naming her as a suspect and asking for tips so that they could finally solve the disappearance of their father, who's been missing, like I said, since 97.
Right. And on television last night, the lawyer said that that ad only cost $6,400. Is that all it costs to get
an ad
in prime time on ABC? Are you kidding me?
Wow. I mean, we should just take a GoFundMe around the station.
Advertise, I don't know, the Eddie and Rocky show.
Right? Why not?
Together? What the hell? That'd be great.
You probably
should
could.
Totally do that.
Yeah. But, Nobody told me that it was that cheap.
That's impressive. Unless I misheard it. Maybe it was $64,000, but I swear that, because the lawyers, I can't believe it. It was only $6,400 to put this ad out there during prime time. But anyway, So they're trying to find information, but if they do, can they still open the case, or did you not just say that the case can't be opened?
Well, the statute of limitations ran out for the forgery on the will, but there's no statute of limitations for murder in Florida, and they do assume that she murdered her husband, Don, and whether he's under the septic tank, as some people believe, or he's been fed to big cats, as Joe Exotic likes to tell people, that's unknown, but there is a $100,000 reward. So you have an entire internet full of wannabe like investigators basically trying to crack this case. And they have pulled some documents that are pretty questionable. You know, the septic tank issue where he's supposedly buried under the septic tank. That's an urban legend. She lied about the dates when she pulled the permits to actually put in that septic tank. So it happened to be about 2 days before Don went missing.
These days with social media, there's a lot of social media sleuthing, right? People,
yes,
this
it's a whole
with,
subculture, yeah. And it's really a cool subculture because they get on Reddit, they have their own boards, there's entire communities of like couch sleuths basically that hang out and just solve crimes in their spare time, and I think that's awesome.
The first one I saw and really remember was The Making of Murder,
yes,
right? On that almost, and that guy, there was lots of evidence that was, you know, people kind of pointed to and help the police out. That was pretty neat. But I will say, I will save you 30 seconds of your life. Do not go on YouTube and watch Carol Baskin's dance on Dancing with the Stars, because it was not good. Not that you expect it to be good or
yeah.
even
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, I wonder how they match people. I've always wondered that, like how you match the celebrity with the professional dancer. Like, do you draw straws? Like, because somebody got the short straw.
Yeah, I mean, whoever the male dancer is. Like,
because you know that guy's just like, oh, please just don't kill me.
Don't kill me. You're right. I mean, getting voted off early is the least of his worries. She may just not like the
right.
guy. And
I mean, you know, it. And if she starts talking about tuna oil or whatever, sardine oil it was, that, you know, cats like to eat sardine oil. And it's like, Carol, why are you talking about this when we're talking about your missing husband? That's really questionable. And she just still doesn't understand.
I just never understood her whole deal, because she had a website and devoted her life to going after people with big cat rescues mm-hmm. when she and herself, in fact, had essentially a big cat rescue.
Yes.
That allowed people to come see the tigers and pay money to do that.
It's all who your friends are. She just happened to be in with PETA and the USDA. The USDA was not Joe Exotic's friend.
No. And Joe Exotic was not his own friend. He did a lot of damage.
Yeah, poor Joe Exotic. He and Jeff Lowe are still at it. Yeah. Still at it. And he's in prison. But apparently Jeff Lowe wants a cut of whatever clothing deal Joe Exotic has. Because Joe does have a clothing deal right now.
Even in prison?
Yes.
Is it like stuff with sequins on it?
He actually put out a line of underwear. So if you are interested in purchasing boxers with a creatively placed, shall we say, Joe Exotic head on your boxers.
That's what every guy wants and every lady wants.
I mean, there are some ladies out there. This is going to be the hot Halloween costume this year, right?
It has to be, right?
All of Tiger King is like, you can go with so many different options in Tiger King.
If you don't dress up like Carol Baskins, we're not friends anymore.
See, I was going to dress as Joe Exotic.
That would be even better. Right. Penciled in mustache,
yes,
the whole deal.
I was going to go for it.
Can't wait.
All out.
Rob, what's your Halloween costume?
Oh, I have a t-shirt with Grover's face on it from Sesame Street.
Lame.
Okay.
I'm a grouch. Is there any truth to the rumor that there's a Tiger King discount for advertising on the Eddie and Rocky show?
We would gladly give it to them. You know,
man,
if
we could talk to Tiger King... Joe Exotic himself from prison.
Where's our sales department? Get them on that, you know, and get a sponsored segment. Get him on the show.
Yeah.
Get a special on Netflix called Eddie and Rocky King.
Eddie and Rocky King. I like the sound of that, Rob. Throw that down the pipeline, yeah.
Note to self. From the UC Health Traffic
All right, it's the Eddie and Rocky Show. I'm alongside Rachel today. We may be getting to president. So if that happens, we will break in. But I saw this today, Rachel. This is one of those, you've seen these before, where it compares like the cost of stuff and what life was like in the olden days versus now, right? So and this one was America in 1950 versus America in 2020. In 1950, typical woman got married for the first time at age 20. Typical man got married at first time at age 22, 2020. Typical married woman gets married first time age 27, man 29, right? And you go on and on, right? Average family income in 1950, $3,300. It's now $52,000. Average car cost in 1950 was $1,500.
Wow.
God. Average car cost now is about $32,000. By the way, my dad used to have an old 1967 Corvette. And,
nice.
And he had a couple of them. Was like he would get them, and he would fix them up, and then he'd sell them. And I would never get to ride them.
Hands off, right? Did you help with the restoration process?
No.
Did you? Oh, you weren't even allowed to do that.
No,
wow.
I fully expected a ride, but I contributed nothing. Side note: one time he got one from whatever some guy in Florida, right? And I knew that it was getting delivered that day. So I was a whole day at school. I'm like, man, I can't wait. When I get home, this car's going to be there. And I'm going to take a ride. We're going to go for a cruise. It's a beautiful day. And I get home and I will go open the barn or the barn door. And he's got all four wheels and tires off, the whole dash, all the seats, everything stripped out of this car. And
already. Wow.
We didn't get to take a ride in it yet?
Moss does not grow under your dad's feet, does
it? No, it does not. He is a man of action. But anyway, nevertheless, medium home income in 1950 was $7,300. It's now the median home price is about $189,000. Anyway, so you and I got to talking. You're just kind of off a tangent of that. If you could go back and live, Rachel, in any time period in history... Right. And maybe you'd say I would don't want to live now. Right. But maybe there's some other time that you could go back and live in. What do you think? What is like a time period that you think, man, I could really thrive there. I people would understand me more there and I would just get along better. And I'd be happier in that time period.
I don't know that I think any time period I went to, I would probably end up being accused of being a witch because let's face it, my personality just lends itself to being, you know, of that ilk. But otherwise, I would say medieval Scotland. But like I said, probably be burned at the stake for being a witch. Otherwise, I think it would be really cool to, you know, see the castles, like, and all of the communities around the castles. They're all built in that, in the kind of gothic, cool, like, the architecture would be awesome. Or Victorian era, less witchcraft, but still a possibility.
A little bit, yeah, maybe a
still
little bit.
Still a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, that's very possible.
All right, well, while we have a few minutes, we'll take your calls. 513-749-7000, pound 700 AT&T, 1-800, the big one. So you're going with Victorian-ish era, Scotland.
Yeah, or medieval Scotland.
Okay, medieval Scotland. Okay.
Medieval Scotland. Let's say Victorian, I'll go Victorian New York, because New York was really cool during the Victorian era with all the guild kind of going into the Gilded Era with all the cool. Basically, I want to go back and see architecture.
Okay, that's cool. I think I would choose like Civil War times. I know that's like kind of a tough time, but I don't know. I just think it was, there's a lot of stuff changing in America, but it was still very new. And I don't know. It was a pretty, it was just a pretty wild. I'm fascinated with Civil War history and I love visiting the places and the sites and all that sort of deal. But I think that would be cool. I mean, there was, you had to be pretty tough.
And I, and if I remember correctly, because we did this as a fast break question a little while ago, I think we said if you could decorate your wall like with a certain kind of weapon, and it didn't take, by the way, any time for either of us to immediately pretty much answer that question.
You were a sword, weren't you?
Yes, mine was a sword, and it was a Scottish sword, so this all makes sense. And then yours was a Civil War era, I think it was
a musket or
rifle, right?
Right, exactly, okay. Something like that. So
I remember?
I don't know. I just think it would be, it's hard to say cool because it was a very brutal time. You know what I mean? They were cutting guys' legs off. There was the Civil War. I mean, lots of thoughts of death, destruction, but.
It'd be an interesting time
interesting.
In history. Yeah, to experience.
Right.
And I think the eras I picked too would probably be that. But once again, it's mostly based on architecture.
Everybody's got their thing.
Exactly. Thank you.
Let's go to Chuck on a cell. Chuck, fire away a time period in the world history that you would like to live in and why.
I mean, I'd have to say that my father and my mother's time was probably about the best. Now, they were, I'm 56, so they were born in 1939. So, I mean, he was the right age where he missed World War II in Korea, was too old for Vietnam and drafting. So you missed all that. But also at the same time, you got all the cool music. You got all the cool cars and that sort of thing. In addition to that, I mean, if you were earlier than that, could you imagine these guys taking a bath once a week? How would that smell like? And then you go even back further. Well, no. The hygiene is a plus, definitely. So at the time.
That's a good call, Chuck, and very good answer. Thank you. Now, you have to consider that. In medieval time,
I
believe they bathed like once a year.
Yeah, it was not often in the whole throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
The man of the house got to bathe first, then the rest of the family, and last were babies, which nowadays that would be. You need to wash more than a baby. I feel like
that would be the cleanest thing you want in your home. By then the water was so filthy that if a baby was in, you wouldn't see it. You throw the baby out with a bathwater.
But I feel like we have to preface this by saying we're taking our like current world knowledge back with us, right? So that doesn't mean that I have to only bathe once a week. Everybody around me, I have no control over that. But I work at EBN, so I mean,
but you're gonna
already doing that.
But you're going to say, hey, so where's my shower at? And they're like, shower? Like, well, yeah, I'm just going to draw a bath here. And they're like,
witch!
Yeah, witch! Burn her right now! Blasphemy, she speaks. Let's go. Merle, fire away a time period to live in and why. Go.
January 5th, 1954, Memphis, Tennessee, Union Street.
Explain.
That's the day Elvis Presley walked into Sun Studios and Sam Phillips was behind the studio wall and recorded history. That would be the coolest day to sit back and watch happen.
So you would just love to just kind of be walking along the street there and say, I'm going to go check out this studio here and see what's going on. Boom, you walk in, there's Elvis laying it down.
Yeah, I'd love to be sweeping the floors and go, wow, this is cool.
That guy's pretty good. What's his name? Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Weird name.
That's good, Merle. Thank you for the call. Now that's even like a subcategory of like specific moments in history.
Yes.
I don't want to do that now. I think we should maybe save that for later.
Do you want to do that tomorrow? Maybe
we should do that tomorrow.
That would be cool. And that gives me some time to think about it because I'm like overwhelmed with potential answers. I don't know about you, but there's a lot of different just things you would want to see, right? Like different days for different reasons. not all good days either.
No, a lot,
I've got a couple days that bad ones. But it would just be interesting.
I remember that. I was there to witness that. No, no question about it. So, all right, we'll do that. We'll save that for maybe today or tomorrow or something.
Okay. Depending on when the president comes on.
Yeah.
If he does.
Exactly. Give me another one. Not middle ages, where would you go?
You know what? Probably still the Victorian era, but moving towards the Gilded Age and all of the Impressionist paintings that are going on.
So you want to see art.
Basically, I want to see art, and I want to be able to wear a hoop skirt without people judging me, because I have done it, and they do judge, and I would just like to go somewhere where I'm not going to be judged.
Yeah, because everyone's wearing it back then.
Right,
so.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
The bigger the skirt, the better. I'm about that life.
I wonder if there's anybody out there, or maybe there'd be a lot of people that would say, you know what, I would choose to live right now. Maybe not 2020, but 2019.
Really? Somebody would say 2020? Well, maybe in 50 years.
No, not 20. Yeah.
Maybe 50 years, people would be like, that would have been some really wicked stuff to like see in real life.
Well, I mean, to that point, there was probably nobody living in the Civil War times that was like, boy, this is fantastic.
But here you are.
And here I want to go. But there's going to be some people that say, boy, I wonder what that was like. God, they just like shut down the country for like hardly any reason. And everyone lost. It was
like
awful.
Year. And yeah. It was just, yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Interesting. Rob, where would you live and why?
I would live here in the U.S. I would love to have experienced the 1930s and 40s, like the big band era.
That'd be cool. I didn't dig that.
Because that music is phenomenal, and it would have just been cool to see all that stuff coming out. And you got all the gangsters and Prohibition.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people would like music. I would qualify as an art form, too. So a lot of people are kind of choosing a different kind of art form to go experience.
Totally.
Most are cooler than mine, right? Yeah. But I'm just saying.
Interesting. the big band era, the only thing that makes me think of the big band era is driving the car with my grandpa in the early, mid-80s. And he would, whatever radio station it was back then, AM something, they played all that old big band stuff, I guess he listened to when he was young. And I was like, I don't like this very much, but I would appreciate it now. You know
all
what I
mean? Bing Crosby stuff, though, that's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the crooners back then. Oh, just great music. Mm. And we could have time-warped Devo back then, too.
See? I knew you were going to do it. I was trying to hit the button before you said it.
You never fail me, Rob. Thank you.
I squeaked it out.
You did.
My pleasure.
Dedicated. My pleasure. Yes. Fire away.
Through being cool. From the UC Health.